Assalamu alaikum, dear viewers. Hello and welcome to another episode of Spotlight Middle East. I am Rahshan Saglam and I will be your host today. Military sources revealing the involvement of Israel in the battle in Syria. As per those sources, Israel was helping insurgents through providing them with details, information about the presence of the Syrian army, and according to security information, before the start of the first round of the attack, the Israelis succeeded to disrupt communication system for each of the 4th Division, the Republican Guard, units of Hezbollah elite forces, the Iraqi Abdul Fadl al-Abbas factions, and deployed in the region. A Lebanese newspaper said that the Israeli troops have provided maps and photos of the Syrian army positions to the attacking force, which moved from Jordan under the leadership of Saudi US Israeli coordinated intelligence. This and a lot more will be discussed in today's episode with the political analyst Dr. Jamal Wakim. Hello and welcome to the episode.
Hello.
We are going to dig deep into the Israeli interference in the battle in Syria, but before we do that, we are going to take a detailed report shedding the light about this matter. A report, dear viewers, and we will be back.
All eyes have been on East Ghouta, the agricultural belt surrounding Damascus, especially in the wake of the area's chemical attack. Yet for weeks, the Syrian army has been pressuring ahead with operations in western Ghouta, witnessing rapid advances and regaining control over some locations. The Lebanese newspaper As-Safir reports that the final toll of the military operations is not known thus far, but 8 rebel leaders of Al-Habib al-Mustafa brigade were killed in the first attack. The newspaper also spoke of a major contribution of Israel in Al-Ghouta battle, as it is providing the foreign fighters with maps scoping of governmental locations and disabling communication system between members of the Syrian army. According to reports, the army also seized a cache of weapons, including Israeli-made LAV missiles, during an operation near the capital. The army found the hideout with the help of people and their reports and seized large quantities of homemade bombs, RPG rockets, mortars, roadside bombs, rocket launchers and maps. More reports said that the American citizens as well as Canadian and European nationals have taken up arms in Syria federal officials. They have said that American militants could become radicalized by Al-Qaeda-linked terrorist groups and return to the United States as security threats. These are indications of an imminent battle in Ghouta. The battle will have long-term strategic implications, especially in terms of expanding the safe zone protecting the Syrian capital. But it will further pressure the militants throughout the entire Damascus countryside. Is Ghouta that important to free Syrian army to an extent that they are seeking an Israeli help? And will the Ghouta battle decide the destiny of Geneva II that is yet to be held?
Dr. Wakim, you are an expert when it comes to the Israeli and regional relationships in the region. So what do you think, and how far are the Israeli support for the insurgents in Syria?
I believe that the Israelis are interfering in the situation in Syria by providing logistical support and intelligence information for the insurgents and their allies. I don't know, I never heard before about experts, Israeli experts on ground yet. But on the political level, I believe that the Israelis have an interest in toppling the Syrian regime, or at least to destabilize it. And they have the same interest as the Saudis, Jordanians, and the Americans, because for the past 2.5 years, the Americans and their allies have been trying to topple the Syrian regime for many reasons. One of them was that the Syrian regime had good relations with Iran, and because Assad refused to break his ties with Iran.
Mm-hmm.
That's why.
And because of the resistance and because definitely, of supporting Hezbollah. A lot of reasons.
Too many reasons, mm-hmm. but one of them was that he refused to break his ties with Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Made the United States try to topple this regime. However, the regime proved resistant to all attempts against it.
Mm-hmm.
So, due to many factors, one is the national feeling mm-hmm. of the Syrians, who saw that their country's fate is at stake.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the support to the regime, which is still strong among the Syrian population,
mm-hmm.
And the support of allies of Syria like Russia, Iran, and China. So the moment the Americans failed to do this, and the moment the Syrian regime was able to achieve major successes prior to the Geneva II talks
mm-hmm.
due in a few weeks from now, the Americans saw that they had to intervene directly and to push their allies for more involvement in the Syrian scene in order to block or to limit the Syrian successes,
mm-hmm.
because if the Syrian regime would be capable of imposing its will over
on
its
ground.
Mm-hmm. on ground. So what would remain in the hands of the United States mm-hmm. to bargain about with the Russians, with the
mm-hmm.
Iranians, and with
mm-hmm.
the others? So that's why we saw an Israeli involvement
mm-hmm.
in the Syrian crisis, in addition to the Saudi mm-hmm. involvement.
Jordan,
definitely.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about the major powers. And why Saudi Arabia and Israel? Because they are both part of the American agenda
mm-hmm.
for
mm-hmm.
the Middle East. So that's why the Saudis are cooperating closely with the Israelis,
mm-hmm.
with the Jordanians, with the Qataris, but the Qatar had shifted sides. It's trying to reapproach its
mm-hmm.
policies towards the region. There was an opening towards Iran lately.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the Turks also, there is a change
in
their
now.
Yes, but for the time being, we have the Jordanians, Israelis, and Saudis.
Mm-hmm.
Alongside other Gulf states, which are which are part of or come under the Saudi influence,
mm-hmm.
I believe that the battle will intensify in Syria, and of course the regime will not be toppled, but I don't think that the regime will be able to resolve the situation to its favor anytime soon. It will
mm-hmm.
be harder
mm-hmm.
because of this direct Saudi-Israeli-Jordanian
So if we want to put it this way, the U.S. pushed Saudi Arabia pushed Jordan into interfering in this battle in cooperation with the Israelis.
Yes.
But now what we saw in this battle, in Al-Ghouta battle, and in the first day, that the Israeli intelligence were able to disrupt the communication system for
yes.
certain brigades
mm.
And for Hezbollah and Abu Fadl Abbas, the Iraqi
mm.
brigade, and those factions working on the ground in Ghouta. So this is what they did, and they gave photos and maps for the insurgents.
Mm.
What's going to be next? How would Israel interfere in another step or another stage? Would it interfere on the ground, or
I don't believe that there will be direct Israeli mm-hmm. Interference on ground.
It's just going to be help from through intelligence and
they don't need
logistical.
To be, because supporting the insurgents logistically through information
mm-hmm.
and through
this is
providing them with arms, ammunition, and so on, paid for by
mm-hmm.
the Saudis.
Mm-hmm.
is a profitable deal
mm-hmm.
for the Israelis. But I believe that the Syrians on their side, they are coping with the situation.
Mm-hmm.
They are being able to retaliate, and in spite of everything, the advances of the insurgents were very limited,
mm-hmm.
and they were reversed
mm-hmm.
in the after 1 or 2 days mm-hmm. by the mm-hmm. Syrian army. So I believe that
at the first day they were able to take over 7 villages in Al-Marj area. So they did achieve some kind of an advance.
That was a very limited success, mm-hmm. okay, and which was totally reversed in the mm-hmm. next mm-hmm. day by the Syrian army. Well, frankly speaking, because the Syrian crisis, is not a local crisis. Mm-hmm. It's not limited to Syria, but it involves too many regional and international actors. I don't believe that it will end anytime mm-hmm. soon, mm-hmm. Because
not
of this.
Not even in Geneva too. There will no be ceasefire in Geneva
because,
too.
I believe that the Syrian crisis is mm-hmm. the at the center of a process of change mm-hmm. in global affairs or in the balance in international politics. Mm-hmm. We are moving from a unipolar system mm-hmm. led by the United States into a multipolar system where we would have several powers playing a role in this world. Until then, there will be this period, transitional period, mm-hmm. Will take around a decade or so.
And that far, that much.
Yes, and I believe that the Syrian crisis, mm-hmm. It will witness ups and downs. Mm-hmm. Definitely the Syrian regime will not be toppled. However, mm-hmm. I don't believe that we will see an end of the crisis in Syria mm-hmm. before a few years from now.
If we want to analyze the situation right now, the political situation concerning the Syrian crisis, we see that the U.S. changed its opinion about what's happening in Syria, mm-hmm. and it does not want to topple the government anymore or President Bashar al-Assad.
Because it was proven for the mm-hmm. Americans that the Syrian regime was too strong. On one hand, it enjoys widespread support among mm-hmm. the Syrian population, but at the same time,
so it's not a piece of cake. It was not
yes,
easy.
Yes, definitely.
To
but
at
the same
regime.
Time, the Russians mm-hmm. and the Chinese and the Iranians have a big interest in the survival of the regime in mm-hmm. Syria, because if Syria falls into the American hands, mm-hmm. then Russia, China, and Iran would be prohibited from having any access to maritime mm-hmm. Trade routes. Mm-hmm. And if this happens, this means that the economy of these countries will implode. Mm-hmm. And they will be facing crisis mm-hmm. on their territory, mm-hmm. insurgents, radical Islamist groups, mm-hmm. Whether in the Caucasus, Central Asia, or Western China, will damage the national.
So it's not just a matter of being allied to Syria.
Definitely,
or the
it's not. Actually, the war on Syria mm-hmm. is indirectly targeting the Russians, mm-hmm. the Iranians, mm-hmm. and the Chinese. Mm-hmm. So that's why I believe that it's not the Syrians who owe mm-hmm. the Russians mm-hmm. or the Iranians or the Chinese. It's the other way around. Mm-hmm. Or let's say it's mutual. It's mm-hmm. mutual interest. Because had the Syrian regime mm-hmm. collapsed, I believe that the Iran would have been totally encircled by American bases, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. the prospects of an imminent American attack would have been very, very possible. Mm-hmm. Also, we should not forget about the problem that the Russians had faced with radical Islamist groups financed by Saudi Arabia mm-hmm. in the mm-hmm. 1990s, mainly in Chechnya, Ingushetia, and in Central Asia. Also, the Chinese have the Uyghur problem in Western China.
So it's not going to be easy for all of these allies of Syria. We are going to continue with that, but we are going to take a shorter break, and we will be back to your viewers. We were speaking before the break that the war in Syria is international and has to do with the war against Iran, Russia and China, an economic situation and economic defeat for those countries. So since it is international, so we need an international solution for that war, and that international solution might be Geneva II. So if we go to Geneva II, you said that we might not witness a ceasefire in Syria.
Yes. Well, because we need to see what's going on and the struggle over global hegemony between the United States on one hand and Russia, the European Union, China, even India and Brazil on the other hand, including Iran. And it's not only limited to Syria. I believe that part of exerting pressure on the Russians by the Americans is destabilizing Ukraine now. And the Ukrainian crisis has much to do with the competition, with this confrontation between the United States and Russia. So the Americans are trying their best not to withdraw, not to back down on their original objectives. Because even if they want to strike a deal with the Russians, they want to make this deal very costly for the Russians. And of course for the Iranians and the Chinese. As I said before, we're moving from a unipolar system towards a multipolar system. And since early times, Syria has been the crossroad of all international trade routes, the traditional ones. So any power that aimed at having a hegemonic role in the world had to control either partially or fully Syria. So that's why, because we have too many powers that are competing over to acquire a status in international affairs, each and every one of these powers is trying to
have a
let's say, extend part, partial influence at least, over parts of Syria or in the Near East. This is how we can understand what's going on in the region, and it's not to be separated from other events around the world. I said, for example, Ukraine has much to do with with what's going on.
And it's closer, and Russia, it's going to have a wider effect on Russia.
Definitely, definitely. But I believe that the West, in general, is retreating. We're witnessing the end of the two centuries of Western domination, and we're witnessing also the rise of Asia.
Okay, so we witnessed last week the deal between the Iranians and the Americans, and the Iranians and the P5 plus one, the five powers plus one plus Germany. So those negotiations, which came out with a huge deal, an important deal, a historic deal for Iran maybe, this deal wouldn't change the situation on the Syrian crisis and concerning the Syrian crisis, or would it just change
it
the situation
in
Iran?
It would have a positive impact. But we need to wait, because this deal is just the beginning. And we need not forget that the history of Iranian-Western relations is full of, let's say, prejudges. And there is a lot of, I don't believe that there is much confidence between the two sides, because since early, since the late 19th century, early 20th century, Iran, which is a very proud nation, has fallen under Western and Russian influence, and this have injured Iranian pride. In 1952, for example, if we go, deal with the Iranian-American relations, Iran has been wounded deeply by the American involvement in the coup d'etat against the nationalist Iranian nationalist leader Mohammad Mossadegh. Later on, when under the Shah, Iran was turned into a pseudo-American colony, for example, and this has added injury to
the system in Iran,
yes,
or to the country.
And then we had the after the Iranian Revolution, we had this the Americans pushing Saddam Hussein to launch a war against Iran.
The
so
war
it's
that
a history full
Iran.
of let's say conflict and mistrust. So if they want to build fruitful relations, it will take them at
time.
Least few years. It needs because they need to rebuild trust between them, and this will. That's why I believe that we're still in the beginning. It wouldn't have immediate impact on the situation in Syria.
Speaking about that deal, this deal raised anger and maybe hesitation about the U.S.-Israeli relationships. And Israel has fears from the deal that happened between those countries, the powers, world powers, and Iran. Do you think that this has anything to do with Israel helping insurgents in Syria?
That's one major reason, actually, because the Israelis are very concerned about the rise of Iran as a major regional power. If we go back in history, Iran has always played a major role in the region.
And have always been the enemy of Israel.
Yes, and Iran wouldn't pose any damage to the interests of the surrounding countries because it's been an integral part of the region since early time in history. While Israel is an imposed, a fabricated state, that is trying to normalize its presence in the region by trying to redraw the geopolitical map in a way that would fit its interests and its perception of its own identity
in the region.
That, yes.
If we have
that's
nations
why
that has
Israel is very anxious because Israel has been hostile to the rise of any regional power because it would definitely marginalize its role as a regional power. At the same time, the American-Iranian deal is also making the Saudis anxious about their fate because. Saudi Arabia, throughout history, the Arab Peninsula have never played a decisive role in the region except for the period when we had the rise of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, and so on. But throughout history, the Arab Peninsula have never been united under the banner of one power and have never been able to play an influential role.
And this is what Saudi Arabia and maybe Turkey were trying to do.
Yes, definitely, because they were trying to block Iran from rising to prominence because it will marginalize both Iran, both Saudi Arabia and Turkey. But the Turks can draw good relations, can have good relations with the Iranians because they can play the link between Iran and Europe.
Is it what's happening now?
I believe so, because the change in Turkish
positions,
politics
towards what's happening in Syria.
Definitely.
We're not hearing Erdogan speaking anymore about the Syrian crisis.
Actually, I believe that soon we will no longer hear Erdogan speaking because I believe that his chances to remain in power are very weak, and we are witnessing a shift in power to favor the rise of Abdullah Gül, by the way, as the prominent figure in Turkey.
However, Erdogan was trying to become the president of Turkey instead of Abdullah Gül. This is what he was trying to
do. He couldn't amend the constitution to make the the system
he,
a presidential
He wanted
system.
To, but he couldn't.
I believe that we're witnessing the downfall of Erdogan, and I don't believe he has much
especially in the law of his party, he cannot be re-elected.
Yes, for a third time. So I believe that, and there are a lot of dissent within the AKP party, by the way. But also for Saudi Arabia, they have a deep crisis, and the Saudis cannot offer anything to the Iranians except, I don't know, being an agent to the Americans.
Now Saudi Arabia is playing an important role into the battle in Syria. It is working on helping more insurgents to go into Syria through the Jordanian borders, which what was called the Islam Army or Islamic Army. And it is very serious because Bandar bin Sultan has said that this might be the last chance for Bandar bin Sultan to prove that the opposition groups can take some advances on the ground in Syria.
I believe that this would be the last role played by Bandar bin Sultan. The Saudi regime is facing a deep crisis because they still don't have a formula to move from the second generation to the third generation. All sons of Abdulaziz, King Abdulaziz, the founder of the kingdom, are in their 70s and 80s. Within a decade, there is a formula set between the brothers to move power from the elder brother
to
his younger brother upon his death. But they don't have a formula to move on to the third generation, the grandsons of Abdulaziz. And Bandar bin Sultan is, in spite of his prominence in the media, but he doesn't have strong alliances in Saudi Arabia because his mother doesn't come from a prominent tribe in Saudi Arabia. So the only role that he could play is to pose as an implementer and executor of American agenda in the region. And if he fails, and it's most likely that he would fail, then he will be failing in the only test that where he would have been able to achieve success. In this case, I believe that it will be the end of his political career.
Is the end of his political career going to be due to dealing with the Israelis, or it's something?
I don't
that
think so. There were secret dealings between Arabs and Israelis.
But this time it is.
Even if it's in the open, they are not ashamed of it. And a few days ago, we had the Israeli President Shimon Peres addressing 29 Arab and Islamic leaders in Abu Dhabi, and they had no shame over that. So let's be realistic. I believe that Bandar bin Sultan, the end of his career will be much related to his inability to topple the Syrian regime.
However, Bandar bin Sultan have said that it is going to be a huge battle now in Syria, and he wanted to achieve advances for the oppositions before Geneva too, because this is the
time frame.
But
I don't believe that
he
will
has.
Achieve much. I don't believe he will achieve much success on
not
ground.
Even cooperating with Jordan, with pressuring Jordan, pressuring
I believe that the situation is much to the favor of the Syrian army and the Syrian regime, and the Americans are asking Bandar just to have something to bargain over in order to be able to sit on the table before Geneva or in Geneva too.
We were going to speak about Geneva too and the Kalmoum battles and the battles inside Syria, but before we are going to a shorter break, dear viewers, and we will be back. So we were speaking about the Geneva too, and what is needed to go into the table and sit on the table and discuss the situation and how ways to solve the crisis in Syria. Who do you think is going to be present on that table?
Definitely the Americans, the Europeans, the Saudis, the Qataris, the Turks, the Russians, Iranians, and Chinese.
Those. Who is going to represent the Syrian regime is going to be present.
Yes.
This is what we heard. But who is going to represent the Syrian opposition?
That's
groups?
The big dilemma because the Syrian opposition is full of dissent and divisions. And they didn't even agree on on a delegation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this is the biggest dilemma facing the
because
Americans
the Free Syrian
allies.
Army has separate people representing him. We have the coalition.
We have too many groups.
The council.
Yes. We have too many groups, actually.
Who's going to represent the Nusra Front and ISIS?
I don't believe that they will be present in the peace negotiations.
So they're not going to stop
Definitely
to have
not.
A ceasefire?
They will be used, and then they will be disposed of later on.
Mm-hmm. How? Who's going to dispose them?
The ones who are financing and training them.
They're going to stop the finance and training. And
yes, and they
this
will
is how
be,
they're gonna
they
be
will
demolished.
Render them easy prey for attacks by the Syrian army or any other regular troop, Iraqi, Turkish.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the benefit of the region, the situation in the region, and the benefit of Israel is in toppling the government in Syria?
Yes, definitely.
How? Because let's say if the regime was toppled and Bashar Assad left the country, we're not going to have a country anymore. We're not going to have a government. We're going to have people conflicting among each other.
That would run to the benefit or to the best interest of Israel, because Israel is trying to redraw the geopolitical map of natural Syria along confessional and ethnic lines in order to fit its perception of its identity as a Jewish state, as a minority state within in a context of states that depend on minorities or minority states.
This is what we have been witnessing in the Arab Spring or the so-called Arab Spring, the uprising.
Yes, definitely.
Countries who want to, the minorities are uprising, the minorities are calling
establishing states on confessional lines, like a Christian state, a Sunni state, a Shia state, and so on.
They think that if the government in Syria was toppled, this is what's going to happen in Syria. We're going to have a few states.
That was the original plan, but as the Syrian regime wasn't toppled, they just want to weaken it enough and so that it wouldn't gain or acquire much gains in Geneva too.
If you want to speak about the Syrian regime and how strong is the Syrian regime right now, after what happened in Al-Ghouta and what's happening in Kalamun, we're witnessing advances in Al-Kalamun with the help, of course, of Hezbollah. Not only the Syrian Arab army is working over there with the help of Hezbollah. However, insurgents are getting from the city of Arsal in Lebanon and on the Lebanese borders are getting a lot of ammunition.
Arsal is not a big deal because Arsal is encircled and fully cut off from the rest of the world. So if the Syrian army and on one side and Hezbollah on the other side want to block the city, they can
they
easily
can
block
that.
It. Yeah. So I don't think it's a big issue, Arsal. The bigger issue is what's going on in Tripoli now, because it affects the whole stability of Lebanon, and it will cause much damage to the stability of Syria.
And we've witnessed that the battle in Tripoli, it is not only now, it's not anymore between the Jabal Muhsin area and the Tabani area.
Spreading.
It extended and it spreaded, and the Lebanese army cannot anymore tolerate the situation and
Definitely.
Cannot control it. And we've heard that the Free Syrian Army and the insurgents working in Syria have accused the government, the Lebanese government, or said to the Lebanese government that if we witness any help from Hezbollah or any part in Lebanon to the Syrian army in Syria, we are going to to respond to Lebanon, towards Lebanon. Do you think that this
what
is
they
possible?
That's what they have been doing since the beginning of the crisis in Syria. So this is avoid the argument full of
but what's happening in Tripoli is part of this. It's part of the Syrian crisis. It is opponents and supporters of the
Definitely,
Syrian
they are clashing
regime.
On Lebanese territory, but this is normal for the two countries, which were but one mm-hmm. until 1920, mm-hmm. and we have a lot of intermarriages, the same families living on both
we
sides.
We have villages
of the borders.
That are the
yes,
same.
Yes, and
they have borders.
Different confessions. Mm-hmm. So it's nearly the same social structure, mm-hmm. and that's why the influence or
it is a spilling
it's,
over
it's, yes,
spill over
definitely.
Into Lebanon. When do you think the Lebanese government is going to be able to control the situation in Tripoli?
I don't think
because
it
is
be
a military zone right now in Tripoli,
but still,
and it's isolated.
Because we don't have the political will to control what's going on in Tripoli, mm-hmm. because we have divisions among the political elite, and we have members of the government who are working closely with the Saudis mm-hmm. To destabilize the country.
Before, at the beginning of the battle in Tripoli, we were witnessing medium light weapons. Now we're witnessing a lot of important weapons that are being used. Mm. So, which means that those parties who want the conflict to go on are giving ammunition and weapons to those fighting.
Definitely.
How can we, or how can the government or anyone stop this support with ammunition and weapons? Who
First,
is going to take the decision?
You need to take the decision. This is the mm-hmm. right thing to do.
Who is supposed to take the decision?
It's the government. But mm-hmm. when we have the acting
the
prime minister,
the government divided. We don't
first,
have the government.
The government is divided, mm-hmm. and the prime minister mm-hmm. is closely associated with the Saudis, mm-hmm. and he has been. Covering up for the insurgents and for those who support the militias in
the Syrian insurgents and
and others
groups.
in Lebanon, mm-hmm. other mm-hmm. Armed groups. So the Lebanese army cannot act but mm-hmm. on a political order mm-hmm. by the government. It cannot act on its own. Mm-hmm. So that's why we wouldn't witness any end of the conflict going in Tripoli
until the Syrian
soon.
Crisis.
I believe
comes
we are.
To
it's much related to the Syrian crisis.
Mm-hmm. Okay, going back to the Syrian crisis, what's happening right now on the ground from advances of the insurgents in Syria? We're mm-hmm. witnessing in the Damascus suburbs, like we said in Al Ghouta. We're witnessing in Maalula a lot of advances. For
actually,
the
Maalula is just a sideshow for mm-hmm. the major battle in Al Qalam. Insurgents running away from one area
to another,
tried to go into Maalula mm-hmm. just to damage the population, which proved loyal to the
but
regime.
They kidnapped 14 nuns.
Okay, they have been kidnapping people left and right, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. nuns are part of the Syrian population mm-hmm. and they will be targeted as any other mm-hmm. group or...
Are they doing this in the battle to show that we are we have advances and we are present here?
Yes,
in the area?
But in reality they are not, they are not achieving any success. Mm-hmm. They mm-hmm. are just retreating from one corner to another. Mm-hmm. And as I said, Maalula is only a sideshow to the major battle.
You're being very optimistic about what's happening on the ground in Syria.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely, because for the first time since two centuries, mm-hmm. we are witnessing the retreat of the West. Mm-hmm. And Syria is being the major scene for this retreat. Mm-hmm. In a decade from now, I believe that things will be more stable in this region, and Europe and the West in general will be, but mainly the United States, will mm-hmm. be facing major problems.
Concerning its
economic,
its economic
political, mm-hmm. and even problems that touch to the unity mm-hmm. of the United States as a country.
This is an important analysis about the U.S. Going back to Syria, now we're witnessing in Aleppo the advances of the Syrian army. What is it due to? Is it due to the ISI fighting with al-Nusra Front? Is it due to Turkey retreating from the situation in Syria?
At one point, the Saudis have pushed to wipe out mm-hmm. The Turkish influence in Syria because they wanted exclusive influence over the opposition.
Can they
Syria.
Do it alone?
They were able, the Saudis were able to achieve this, and they the groups supported by Saudi Arabia reached the Turkish border, which is a very serious threat to the national security of Turkey. This made the Turkish leadership change course and try to mend fences with the Iranians and convince them to mediate with the Syrians. And this made the Turks withdraw their support to some opposition groups in Syria. And this have given the Syrian army the possibility to have the upper hand against the insurgents in Aleppo. And this is how we can explain the success of the Syrian army in liberating many areas from in insurgents.
Not only in Aleppo, we're witnessing advances for the Syrian army in Homs as well.
Yes,
and which is... Homs is most of Homs is under the control of the Syrian army right now.
Yes, definitely, except for the regions close to Al-Badia,
that
the Syrian
desert. Stronghold for the insurgents.
Yes.
Okay, so we have advances in Aleppo, we have advances on Homs, we still have problems in the Damascus suburbs. Mainly, the Syrian army has control over how much percent in Syria, if we want to speak
not
in percentage.
Not less than 70% of Syrian territory.
That much. And do you think that this battle, this 30%, is going to take a lot of time, or it's just a matter of back and forth?
It will be a matter of back and forth because the... we have regional powers implicated in the situation in Syria. Even if the Syrian army is, had it not been for this, the Syrian army would have been able to re-establish stability throughout the country.
Okay, and now we have to ask one question. Is Geneva II going to be held or not?
Not anytime
soon.
Amid
all of these
advances.
Not
anytime soon.
So it's not going to be held on the 22nd of January.
Definitely not.
This is what have been said.
Or it would be a ceremonial event.
Because
void
amid
of any
what's happening
essence.
On the ground, we don't see that there will going to be any ceasefire. And in order to hold this conference or such a conference, we're going to need to witness a ceasefire between those fighting
no,
on the ground.
Even if it would be held, it would be held while battle is going on in Syria.
So we don't need a ceasefire so that we go to Geneva too. So and it's not going to be any time soon. It's not going to be on the 22nd
I don't
of
believe
January.
So. I don't believe so.
You don't think so. Okay, if Geneva II was held on the 22nd of January and if the situation was still the same, we have 70% for the government and for the Syrian army and we have the rest for the insurgents, do you think that with this battle or this thing, in fact, on the ground is going to help the government win the Geneva II or win the negotiations in Geneva II or
well,
get to into a deal?
As I said before, the Syrian crisis has a local dimension, but also a regional and international dimension. We need to see the bargaining going on between different regional and international powers, and we need to see how it goes on all three levels, the local, regional, and international.
You were optimistic a lot about the situation on the ground, but pessimistic about Geneva II, and we all hope that Geneva II would be held in time so that we come to an end to the Syrian crisis. Dr. Jamal Wakin, thank you so much for the great information you gave us and for being in the show. Dear viewer, thank you for watching, and I'll see you next week.